Universität Hamburg.
Good afternoon and welcome. Thank you for the introduction. I'm going to spend a little time today speaking a little bit more about the future. And I think there have been some dramatic events over the last year as we all march towards exascale. And one observation, excuse me, just starting by looking at the top 500 list, is that the petaflop is pretty rare. How many folks have a petaflop machine deployed? Just by a raise of hands? One, two, hopefully it's not more than 10. Three. Okay? Thank you. Three. I see three hands. It's pretty rare. But it's not hard to get to. All you need is cash. And if you have cash, you can buy the cores today. But it's pretty rare when you think of 10 disclosed systems in the world getting to a petaflop. So we want to change that a little bit. Now let's just look at, you know, not all petaflops are created equal, and along the way you have to make choices. We're making choices at SGI. If we just look at the petaflop over at NASA, seventh largest disclosed system, running standard Intel, or commodity, but standard Intel Xeon processors with no acceleration. Just GPUs, standard Linux, standard InfiniBand. And I think this concept of standard is very important to gain the scale and gain the cost efficiency and to gain wide industry adoption for scale. And oh, by the way, it's about 84% peak performance efficient. So not all of the rare 10 petaflops are created equally. And we very much like to evangelize standard Linux, standard InfiniBand. With that said, I am pretty excited about what I see over the next 12 to 24 months. And I just step back and just looking at the x86 core curve, just x86, not looking at non-x86 accelerators. If you wind the clock back to 1971, the industry introduced the one core. And it took near 30 years to get to dual core, 30 years, right? Then another year to get to four core, another 4 years to get to eight core. Today, here in 2011, we have a 10 core system, but we stand at the precipice of the fastest x86 core growth in the history of computing. It's coming our way over the next 2 years. You know, going from 10 core to some X number of cores, our projection is roughly 64 cores over the next 2 years. And then by 2018, continuing that growth rate. So we set at the precipice, the dawn, of the fastest core expansion, the fastest x86 core growth in the history of computing. So I'd like to take those cores out for a ride and see what we can do. If we just sort of map that out a little bit at core count and, you know, look at a sequence of years, 2010, 2013, 2018, you know, by 2013, on kind of our roadmap, we'll be able to achieve an x86 petaflop in four cabinets and have a megawatt per petaflop performance of about 0.25 and decreasing even further, right? So we're in this massive expansion of x86 cores and massive reduction in megawatts per PFLOP. That's going to allow us to build some pretty fantastic machines here in the coming years. So when I think of exascale computing, I think there has to be two goals. One is delivering the EFLOP. You know, a billion IOPS, 20 to 30 megawatts, 256 cabinets. But the EFLOP is going to be extremely, extremely rare. How many folks will have $200 million US dollars to buy an EFLOP system by 2018? Show of hands? No one bold enough? Zero hands were raised. So clearly the goal cannot be an EFLOP because no one in this room can buy one. So So the goal, the dual goal, has to be to democratize the PFLOP, where everyone in this room can raise their hand and say, I have a petaflop or more of computing. 1 million IOPS, 20 to 30 KVA per cabinet, and mass adoption. I think we can get there. And with that, and that's why our announcement with Intel today is so important, because we're making a choice. We've seen enough of the mic architecture to say that it's real, it's going to be delivered, and we're going to build the first system on this platform to democratize the PFLOP. And I think this is an extremely important milestone for exascale computing with two goals: to deliver the EFLOP and mass adoption of the PFLOP. And it's on the standard. I can't wait for that hot seat session, by the way. I don't know what you ask a CEO, but I can't wait of the questions coming my way. But it's on the x86 programming model. When I started my career, I started as a compiler writer. And the first compiler I had to write was for a WayTec code generator. I don't know how many folks remember the 4187 WayTec coprocessor. But I longed for the days of just integrating the 287 and 387 integrating the co-math processor with the integer math processor to get to one processor. I think one of the great benefits of the MIC platform is it's familiar. I'm not going to stand in front of the entire community of the world and ask every programmer to rewrite their program to get to exascale. So I think that the x86 programming model is a winner to get to exascale. And again, this dual goal of being able to democratize mass adoption of the petaflop. So what would one of these systems look like? Right? So 256 cabinets. And if we just look at this little old red dot down here, one cabinet with Mike by 2018 on our projections, one cabinet would be 3.9 petaflops. You build up to the next unit. Take this concept of the pod, or the cube, which we actually first developed at SGI, and self-enclose this cell of 8 cabinets. It's about 15.6 petaflops. Just a row then expands to about 62 petaflops, and the entire data center is one EFLOP on this new architecture, x86 based, by 2018. So we have an expression in the US called the 7-year itch. So over the next 7 years, we're looking at the EFLOP in three phases. We're already designing systems in the 10 to 25 petaflop range on the MIC architecture. If you're interested, we'd be more than happy to talk to you about that. By 2018, we think we'll 2x that on the architecture to 100 to 250 petaflops, and then by 2018, be able to deliver the one EFLOP. And nothing would delight me more to be back here in 7 years. And if you just follow Moore's law, right, I think the smallest system on the top 500 list today is about 5 teraflops. If you just follow that flop curve, that x86 curve, in about 20 times that over the next 7 years, every system on the top 500 list by 2018 will be a petaflop or greater by 2018, and we'll predict one or two EFLOP systems. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Balenicea. The first questions are coming now from Mr. Matsuoka.
You don't know where to start, do you?
Well, I know where to start. Firstly, the lowest ranked machine on top 500 today is 40 teraflops.
I said 50. I'm sorry.
Okay. So, you know, having known SGI for a long time, not the history of the company, but its strength, has always been, you know, very large scale shared memory. Mm-hmm. And when you start envisioning, it's very easy to accumulate flops because all you have to do is to kind of line up the ALUs. But what's one of the biggest impediments we foresee as we move to exascale is how do we deal with scalability, especially in terms of the strong scaling factors seeping in. Right now we have less than a million cores, but we have more than a billion. And the ability of the applications to scale, even a minute factor of strong scalability in applications will greatly compromise the effectiveness of the machines to be utilized at effective utilization ratios. So I thought SGI's competence was there. It has very fast shared memory, a global address space, which helps alleviate some of that problem.
Yep.
So are you going to continue down that path, exascale? Are you still going to have globally address share space, or are you just going to give it up and say we're just going to piece up a whole bunch of ALUs together and that'll be an exascale?
Yeah, it's a good question. We're going to have multiple architectures in the market. One architecture being our shared memory architecture, AltXUV. And, today on Westmere, we scale to 16 terabytes of memory, 2,048 cores, one single system image, standard Linux, and we support Windows. Windows doesn't scale to that to those peaks, and that's a Windows limitation, not a hardware limitation. When Sandy Bridge comes to market, the Romley architecture, we will 4x the size of memory we support, up to 16 terabytes, and we'll 2x the number of cores to 4,096. And we'll keep on that tick-tock with Intel to continue to scale shared memory. We believe in shared memory very much. There's data-intensive problems that are wonderful for a shared memory machine, and data ingest problems, right? If you're taking big data in to pre-process or post-process. So we're going to stick with our shared memory architecture. Heck, we did a press release last year saying in our first three quarters, we've shipped over 500 systems of UV. It's been a great first year. On the compute-intensive side, as we look at the architecture advancing to get to those large-scale core deployments, it's a different architecture. And we think that Intel Mike is the platform, the leading platform to get to that EFLOP. So we'll continue to invest for those workloads that gravitate towards shared memory. And with a stronger foundation in the company, we're able now to do the R&D to get to this larger scale core count on, if you will, a scale-out architecture.
A second short question from Happy.
Thank you, Mark, for the presentation. I would like us just to look at your democracy, use of the word democracy here. And it looks like it's achievable. We can get exascale with your mic. But my question here is that for it to be democratic, it should be able to be used. And you're not taking this community into confidence that will help them get their applications to be used in that system. But the other thing that you forgot about democracy is that to afford it's about money. You didn't tell us anything about how you are going to be able to get us to afford these systems. More so that you've got competition of Mike at the moment. How do you deal with that?
Sure. So so two questions in there. And we use the word democratize very thoughtfully. The application world is going to have to change and optimize their code for those large-scale core deployments. We have a team set up internally. We have over 25 folks in our company who do nothing but understand all the application domains. We're not an application company today. We're a facilitator in the space. So as we look at everything from open source codes, from Gaussian, all the way through closed source codes, of computational fluid dynamics like Fluent and ANSYS, they're going to have to advance equally with the hardware, right? And we hope to be a facilitator in that space. In terms of making it affordable, by 2018, I think a petaflop machine will range between $1 and $2 million.